right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 180. I need a hero, or better yet, I need a hero. Coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. On YouTube, you'll see our streaming channel, Step Into The Portal, and brand new Instagram, Step Into the number 2, The Portal. You can find pictures of all the games that I've been playing. I am your host for this episode, co-host for this episode, The Brant. Thanks so much for joining all of us. I'm so excited because we're talking about my favorite game. Joining me as a co-host is Steve from Beat the Game. Howdy, Steve.
Hey, howdy, Brant. Thanks so much for having me. Hello, all the listeners of Step Into the Portal. How are you doing?
Problem. And you can catch Steve with me live weekly playing Marvel Champions on Step Into the Portal, the YouTube channel. I just want to remind everybody that Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. So for more awesome podcasts, you can go to www.dicetowernetwork.com. And sadly, the Dice Tower podcast is coming to an end. They've got just a few episodes left, but there's great podcasts still in the network that you can check out. You can hear the excitement in my voice. It is not often that you get to interview the designers of your favorite board game of all time, and that's what I get to do today. So I want to welcome both of them. Caleb Grace, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Brad.
No problem. And Michael Boggs.
Hey, thanks for having me on as well.
Awesome. Hey, so excited to have you guys here. Can you tell us about, because the Portal Game Podcast is not just a Marvel Champions podcast, it just happens to be my favorite game. But can you tell us about some of the games that you've designed or worked on over the years, just so people get an idea?
Yeah, Boggs, why don't you go first, buddy?
Yeah, sure. I've worked at Fantasy Flight Games for just over 5 years now. I originally worked on Android Netrunner, Star Wars Destiny. I helped out with Keyforge, and eventually, I was fortunate enough to be put on the team to work on Marvel Champions with Caleb and Nate French. In my free time, I like to play mostly card games. I stick to things that are simple. I really love Seven Wonders Duel. Really love, deck building games and just simple little games, Sushi Go, stuff like that. So I don't have a ton of time to play games, but when I do, just keep it light and fun.
Awesome.
Isn't that so true, Boggs? Like we design games all day and we almost never find time to play them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the blessing and the curse, I think. I've been at the company for a little over 10 years now, which is kind of mind-blowing to think about. It's gone by so fast. In that time, I mostly worked on Lord of the Rings, the card game. I was on that game for over 8 years, which is pretty cool. Not a lot of card games last that long. And we just relaunched it this year with a revised core set, so that's something I'm really excited about. I did just a brief stint on the Warhammer Invasion LCG in my first year at the company, and that was pretty cool.
Eric Lang,
I got to help out. Yeah. I got to talk to Eric Lang a little bit about some of the design philosophies behind each of the factions and get a little insight into the design process there. That was cool. And I got to help out here and there with the Game of Thrones LCG and Star Wars Destiny. I was never on the teams, so my contributions were pretty minor. It was mostly through playtesting and just being in the office to offer suggestions and bounce ideas. Marvel Champions was really my first chance to be involved in the beginning of a game and to earn a design credit. That was really exciting. After being on Lord of the Rings for so long, I was sort of like, what am I even going to do at the company, if I'm not doing Lord of the Rings? And we were just so fortunate to get the Marvel license because I'm just a huge Marvel fan as well as a Lord of the Rings fan. So for fun, I really enjoy card games as well. Like Boggs said, I think there's a reason that we design card games is because those are our favorite. I used to play the Star Trek CCG competitively, at the World Championship level. That was a lot of fun. And more recently, I found myself being very drawn to deck builders, the Star Trek deck builder, Star Realms, Clank. I find those are, because of the time constraints, I don't have a lot of time to do like constructed deck building anymore. So I'm drawn to games I can just sort of set on the table and play, especially if I can play it with my kids.
Nice. I actually have a good suggestion for you then. Zombie Kids. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's very fun. I play with Dean and Luke, who's 6 years old and 4 years old.
Okay.
And they love it. And it's a cutesy zombie evolutionary game. So it's not a campaign, a legacy game.
Legacy.
Where you build up as you play. And it starts off super basic. You roll a dice.
Yeah.
Whatever.
What'd you say it's called?
Zombie Kids.
I'm just typing it in, so I'll have it there. And I'll check it out. Thank you.
And there's zombie teens when they get a little bit older. So.
Oh, fun.
And it just progresses. The game starts basic, and as you unlock more games, you have achievements, you get envelopes, and then your characters develop powers, and then the zombies develop powers, and it just advances the game, which is super, super cool, and takes about 5 minutes to play. So.
Nice, cool.
Very, very fun suggestion there. And it's, what, $15? It's so cheap, but it's very fun.
And they made Zombie Teens to follow it up. So if you enjoy it, there's a second one that you can play through as well. And I think in North America, it is distributed by Asmodee. But I could be wrong. This is my store.
Sure.
Not store owner, but store worker.
Yeah.
Credit. So there's that. Steve, tell us some of the games that you play with your family as well.
Well, my kids are really into Splendor. I bought the Splendor version of Marvel Splendor, and they love. And Dean, even though he's always going for the Avengers, even though I'm not trying to let him win anymore, he still beats my butt like half the time. I'm like, how are you making these? How is this possible? And then so he loves that Snakes and Ladders. Classic with my four-year-old, and then with my wife we play Clank and Catan, the legacy Catan there, which is super fun. I love Catan, and then I love Clank as well. Clank basically some of my favorite games. And for deck builders, Shards of Infinity, very fun, kind of like Magic the Gathering, where you can play 1 to 4 players, and basically the object is to eliminate the other players. And then I think the first box was $15 and it didn't really have anything special aside from you're picking from pool cards and just, you know, trying to combo build your deck as, you know, as the cards come out. And then they came up with a couple of expansions, which were super nice. And then the third expansion was a campaign mode where you can actually play cooperatively, which was very fun. And then the final box, they actually invited people to vote. How do you want to play the last box? Do you want to play it head to head? Or is it like one winner takes all? Or is it a united against a front? And we haven't heard anything yet about the fourth box, but that's going to be the final one for the game. So it's 1-4 and it's done. But super fun to play.
Yes, I highly suggest that if you both like deck builders. Card. It's phenomenal, and it's a good, it's like not a very long game either.
10 minutes. Yeah.
Really neat.
What's that one called again?
Shards of Infinity.
Shards of Infinity. Okay, yeah.
Yep.
I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
Justin Gary, he was a professional Magic player.
Yeah. Oh. I definitely suggest the first expansion because it adds an extra layer of fun with like relics where you have like a special card when you attain a certain level, and it just makes the game so much more fun. But yeah.
Oh, the artwork on it is just gorgeous. I had seen the box. It's funny that you mentioned that one because I'd actually seen the box at a Half Price Books where I shop like every week, and I was so drawn to it just from the artwork.
I'm excited to hear
it's a quality game.
Oh, it's super fun. And you learn it in like 10 minutes. Like, and once you start learning the combos of like, oh, because you have a different color combos, like, oh, okay, if I play green, I can heal. If I this, I have like allies. If I have this, I draw cards. And anyway, and it's pretty fun. So the game can't go on forever, but it's very, very fun. Like 10, 15 minutes a game and you're awesome. Done. Oh yeah. Very cool.
You can also subscribe to Step Into the Portal and watch my playthrough that I did and learn how to play the game. Shards.
Did you make a playthrough?
Yeah. I did one for you. So the other cool thing about Steve, he plays with me, which is neat. And we have never met in person. We are friends because of Marvel Champions. Steve lives in Canada. I live in Connecticut. We figure we're about 5.5-6 hour drive from each other. We've never met up in person, and we have become friends through this game, which is really neat. And we stream together. So thank you for that. And Steve also is multilingual, and he does a lot with the French community. So go ahead and say hello to the French community, Steve.
Hey, salut tous les francophones de la Marvel JCA communauté. Je vous fais un petit coucou, un petit bisou.
So that's really cool. He's got a lot of French followers on his channel. Beat the game.
Just a little side note, Caleb was actually very gracious to join us one on the Marvel Champions Playtime Facebook group. And that was a very special moment. I still have the screenshot. And that was super, like I said,
Right after Chadwick Boseman died, right?
Yeah, we had done a tribute game and everyone was playing T'Challa, Black Panther in every aspect. And it was very, very fun. And the fact that you came made so many people love it. Like, love it even more. It was like, wow, that's so cool. And yeah, and that's how I actually met a whole bunch of people from around the world through Playtime. And I think Brent, did we meet through Playtime? I think we started a little bit, yeah. And then Brian and a couple of other guys, like, I just met through them. And just a way to bond the community together, which was a great experience. And it's still going on now. Like, there's always people posing, hey, you guys want to play? And it's not, and we're playing with the real cards. Cause I know there was something about, you know, playing on tabletop or octagon. You were like, yeah, we can't go into that. And I always said, no, we're playing with our actual cards and face to face. And you guys said that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm glad. That's awesome to hear. I think Boggs will agree, like, building community is and hearing stories about friendships being built around our games is like easily one of the most rewarding parts of what we do. You know, it's just so cool to see communities come up around Marvel Champions or Lord of the Rings or Netrunner or whatever it is that we're attached to, and then hearing those personal stories. Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Oh, yeah, such a pleasure.
Nice. Let's get to those hard-hitting questions.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of the nice stuff.
Yeah, that's right. All right. I got to keep the energy here. I'm drinking my Mountain Dew.
Hey, cheers to that.
We'll be good. All right. So I want to come at this game because, like I said, it's a board game podcast. And if you guys don't know, so actually I don't own the store, but my friend Brian owns the store. And he has been nice enough to kind of give me this job to be the voice and the face now of the store doing all this media and whatnot. And so I kind of want to go through like the Champions 101 for everybody and kind of talking through that. So a sense that I get from Marvel Champions is its accessibility, just how it is accessible to young players, to new players, to non-card game players, maybe to people who are just interested in the Marvel IP. So can you kind of talk through the idea of accessibility in the game Marvel Champions and what you're going for there?
Yeah, you want to tackle this one, Snoop?
I mean, yeah, sure. I that was kind of one of the core ideas that we wanted to represent in the game from the vision, from like one of the first times we talked about it. Marvel is such a big IP. It's such a global thing. And we want to make sure that anyone can kind of sit down and play and enjoy it. So we've really done a lot to keep the game simple and, you know, keep the just a lot of options for what you can do and the heroes you can play and the scenarios and stuff like that. And it's always something that's on our minds. Like it's definitely a key driving force for kind of all of the designs that we tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always happy to hear people say that they feel it's accessible. Like it's so affirming to hear like, okay, we hit the target. You know, we found that space. And I don't know. I never get tired of hearing that. It just makes me feel so good every time someone's like, yeah, telling their friends like, oh, definitely it's pick up a pack and you can play right out of a pack. You know, like that, you know, oh, gosh, it's been going a couple of years now. And I just never get tired of hearing that.
One of my favorite things is this was recent, but I saw a post on Facebook. I think it was somebody was playing with his daughter and she's like 7 or 8 years old. That's just so cool. It's just, it's cool to have a game that, you know, parents and kids can play together and they both enjoy it and they both, you know, are having like a really good time together. So
that's funny you mentioned a 7-year-old, because I actually my son Peter is 7 and he was something piqued his interest last week, and so he said, hey, can you teach me to play? And so I played my first game of Marvel Champions with my boy over the weekend. And of course he was Spider-Man and had a great time because he got to swinging web kick Rhino in the face for the win. You know, he was so pumped.
Everybody's cool. First memory, right? Swinging web kick Rhino in the face.
Yeah. My dean loved, like, he sees Daddy makes his videos and stuff like that. And he's like, Daddy, can we play? I'm like, cool. Yeah. Mommy doesn't want Dean on the camera. So, because I would actually have made already a video with Dean, like, learning to play experience. But she's like, no, I don't want him on the internet, which is fine. Like, I get it. Dean is so funny when we play because he is 6 years old and he reenacts the cards. So the feeling that you get when you're playing that web key. So this is a funny story. Like, he loves Black Panther and he talks like Black Panther. So I am the king of Wakanda and I will pick.
It's great.
And Wakanda because he watches the like little Marvel minute shows. And,
yeah.
Oh, right.
And then, so he's heard the accents and everything like that. And then when he sees a character that he wants to play, like Spider-Man, he's played him a bunch of times. And Captain America loves Captain America. And he just loves
He's got good
that.
Taste.
Oh, yeah. And then, or when he plays Hulk, he loves playing Hulk, too. He's like, rage! So it's always fun seeing, like, coming from, like, a six-year-old kid, seeing this game, he understands most of the mechanics. Like, he understands, like, if there's a three, it costs three cards to play this card. So he gets the mechanics of it, you know? And so that's why it's pretty fun. And he's like, he's already learned to read, so he can read the cards and knows what they do. So it's a great learning experience for him. And he loves it. And his little brother is looking at it. But I tried with Luke, but he is mostly bending cards, so I was like, yeah, you're a little too young.
Maybe not yet, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, he's like, I'll take care of Rhino right now. You know, it's just
done.
I don't see what all the fuss is about. There he goes.
I think it's important. What I like about working in a game store, and I am a full-time teacher, so I'm not in the store all the time, but when I'm in there, you know, I see people come in and they just pick up a pack. Like, so you need the core set to get the villains and to get the standard set of cards. So that's kind of a good starting point. People ask all the time, is this enough? Am I going to get enough play out of this? Because it's a bigger box. It's a higher price point for entry. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's so much playability in the core box. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to move on. And then when you want to move on, you could just pick up another hero and you're ready to go. And I feel like it's important for people to know, you know, kind of in the board game community who are wondering coming in, and then people who are listening from the Marvel Champions community already realize, like, that's what those pre-cons are doing. They're allowing people to come in. Sure, there's better decks that are out there, but they let people to pick up. We have a guy, he just bought Doctor Strange, and then he plays with us, and he just shuffles up that pre-con and just plays the Doctor Strange pre-con. And there's so many of those people that do that because they want to try this game, but they want to get in at that $15 to $20 price point. It does a great job with that.
It's always awesome to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to follow up with like a little bit of more of an like advanced, like as an advanced player. And here's my question is, when you guys are putting together a pre-constructed deck for a hero, how do you choose the reprints that go in? And then would you consider making it more efficient for experienced players?
Boggs, do you have the dartboard in your room that we used to make that decision?
I actually moved it out to the living room.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah, there was probably some unreleased stuff on there we couldn't show on the
podcast. Yeah. And it was kind of like big and unruly. Yeah. It was just
I always like to do it over the shoulder backwards, you know, like
I do it between the legs. I feel like it's more inventive.
So I don't know how sarcastic I should be. I guess
you guys don't know me. Super invasive. I love it.
Like I take for granted people know I'm kidding. It's a very good question, right? Like, Boggs and I both came to this industry as fans of games, as customers, right? So we understand what that's like to be on the receiving end of like, look, I'm giving you money I had to work to earn in, you know, exchange for your product. You know, I want to get a certain amount of value from this, right? And so of course the reprints, for someone who already has a few packs, the reprints are like the least exciting part of the pack, right? Like, you can say that, that's okay. No one's like, awesome, I got my 18th copy of Genius, you know, like I get it. You know, it's okay. So we do have to balance like what we were just talking about a minute ago, like what Brant was saying about, and my buddy picks up Doctor Strange and he can just sit down and play. And that's how we get new players into the game.
We lost
person drawing. Who bought everything. Did I cut out? I'm sorry.
For a second.
It's going to happen on my machine. I'm sorry. we just have to balance the one end of the spectrum where you've got someone who just wants to pick up that first pack and play versus someone who's been following from the beginning, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we have a very scientific method, you know, like it's more about intuition and compassion. Like we really want to keep the number of reprints limited to what is essential.
So maybe I can rephrase that a little bit.
Sure.
As a more advanced player, mm-hmm. Let's say you're playing an aggression deck, mm-hmm. and there's two copies of what's the training, combat training or protection, combat vest. And would you be considerate of like maybe putting just one in and then maybe another card that says that, let's say your hero is kind of lacking on threat removal. Well, let's just put another card that can do that. Or does it have to be two, and three? Or can it be a little bit more like, ooh, we could.
I see what you're getting at. Sure. So we do have some interesting constraints in that regard. A lot of customers might not necessarily think of, but like if we put a brand new card in that deck, then we're putting three copies because that's
100%.
That's part of the promise of the LCG model is that you are getting a complete set. You don't have to chase these cards. If it's a card that's limit one per deck, then we'll just put one in the pack. And so a lot of times those two ofs, are just meant to round out the pack. Like we've already put in the number of allies we want, the number of unique and max one per deck cards we want, and we have two open spots. And so oftentimes it's going to be, okay, what card can we put in? Just two copies. And really our options there are basically core set cards. Because if we put in two copies of a card that's not in the core set, even if it was released in another pack, we can't assume that someone bought that other pack. So let's pick a card in Captain America's deck. Was he come with like teamwork? I think is a card that comes. It's like a leadership.
That was three of though.
Right, but let's imagine for a second. So that card's already been released, and now we're doing a new leadership character, and we're going, hey, we got room for two. Let's throw in two copies of teamwork. Well, we can't assume that somebody already bought Captain America. So this new pack, whatever this new pack is, might be someone's first pack. And if they're only getting two copies of teamwork, they're going to be like, where's my third copy?
That's great insight.
Yeah. So honestly, the two ups are always going to be from the core because the core is the only product that we have any right to assume that somebody playing the game should already have purchased or at least have access to.
Interesting. Oh, okay. So that's actually really interesting. I does it hold true to pretty much every pack? Because I think we had at one point we got the, what was the one that heals a status card in one of the I can't remember which one. Athletic conditioning or something like that. And I know we got that one as a reprint. I was like, why did we get another one of those? But I was just like, I wasn't too sure if it was two copies or three copies of that.
Oh yeah, if it was like we have absolutely done reprints of cards that we introduced in packs, but again, then they're always included times three. And I think we've done that pretty sparingly and strategically as far as like this card got a very positive reception. People really liked this card, whatever it was. I've had people request endurance or downtime, like cards that I thought were like, hey, those are fun. Yeah. And other people are like, I need more. So we're like, okay, we could put three more of those in another deck somewhere.
I will say too, that sometimes there have been times where I'll be testing a new card and realize that it's very similar to an old card, maybe in a previous pack. And it's like, we could just reprint that. We've already got the testing done. We already have the art for it. We already have everything. We can focus our attention on maybe a newer concept in a different direction. You know, sometimes it's kind of a fluid process, but very often, if we've got just a few slots to fill, like we have to fill, of course, that stuff.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for that insight.
I like Bog says he makes a card and realizes there's something similar to it. Whereas my testers will tell me when I make a card, they're like, yeah, Bog's already made that on the last set. I'm like, oops.
And I can attest to that because I worked with Michael on this project. So
the- I want to think about kind of the inspiration behind the game, because there's kind of these three cooperative LCGs now: Lord of the Rings, Arkham Horror LCG, and Marvel Champions is the third iteration. And people will kind of, when they're trying to figure out which one to get into, a lot of it goes down to theme, which totally makes sense. Do you like Lord of the Rings? Do you like Arkham Horror? Do you like Marvel? You know, that's where you can go. But I actually think Marvel has a lot of differences. So I'm looking at it from as a mechanical player. Not that I don't like the theme, but I'm just going from the mechanical end. And there's three major pieces to me in Champions that I think really set it apart from the other two. And I'm not saying the other two are bad, but this is my number one game. So the 15 card hero decks are a big difference, that there's already, you've got your hero card and 15 cards are there. Your hero card flips. There's an alter ego side and a hero side. And then what I actually think is the most important one, because it reminds me of the Eric Lang Star Wars LCG, is you always refill your hand back to full. And in addition, I guess part of that is it has what I call the Race for the Galaxy mechanic, where you use the cards in your hand as resources to pay for the other cards. And none of those things are in any of the other ones, as far as I remember. So can you talk about the inspiration, whether it was other games or what made you do that, or was it the theme that put that in for those elements of Marvel Champions specifically?
Snoop, you want first digs there?
Man, all that was so long ago, it's hard to remember.
You know where you got the discard cards to pay for other cards?
I feel like that was kind of a group thing. I know Boggs is just being, you know, he's just being humble, because the whole flipping to alter ego is 100% his contribution.
Genius.
To the game. It really is. Like, here's the funny thing is, when he suggested it, I felt so silly. And the reason I felt silly, fan out of the group. Not that Snoop doesn't like comics.
It actually cut out when you said that. So it was like, perfect timing. I felt so silly, blank.
Right? Now you could just cut it there, end of the show. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No, you're good.
But like, I was like, why didn't I think of that? That's the most natural suggestion for a Marvel Comics game, is like, even if you like were to talk to Stan Lee, like, he would tell you the difference between Marvel Comics and their competition is that Marvel Comics were about like real people with real problems. Yeah. And alter ego was essential to telling that story. And so I remember being in that meeting. It was like, we had the three energy types. We had the villain and the schemes. We had all the basics in place. And I remember Nate saying, like, it just feels like it's missing something. And I think I was feeling a little bit like protective of the game in that moment, like a little defensive, going like, this is great. We got this, we got that. Like, we're doing all this great stuff. It's so on point. And he was like, yeah, it just feels like it's still missing something though. And that's when Bog said, well, what if you could change from hero to alter ego? And that's where Nate was like, that's it. And again, like, I was just kind of like, why didn't I think of that? Like, you know, from the start, it was perfect. It was just too perfect.
And also confetti dropped from the ceiling. They were waiting.
It was Gerber came out of his office like, dear, 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 dear. That's it.
And
yeah, that was exciting. No, it really was an exciting moment. It was really fun to be part of that. All the other stuff, I think, kind of came together very naturally, where we definitely talked about the other Lord of the Rings and Arkham, and kind of what they were about and what elements we might like to port over and which ones would not be appropriate to bring over. And so early on, it was like, look, in Lord of the Rings, it's very much like the player's driving the story. You're going on a quest.
Yeah.
And so you are driving the story. In Arkham, it's more of a race, right? Where like players are still driving the story, but the enemies are doing something at the same time. But with Marvel, it was like, look, when you boil it down, it's always the bad guys driving the story. It's always like the heroes just want to live their lives. And then the bad guys show up to like start some trouble.
Right. Just leave me alone.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, if, and so our guiding principle was empowerment, you know, fun and empowerment. So like we weren't going to do, okay, every turn you draw one card, every turn you gain one resource. Like that's not empowering enough. It's going to be every turn you get a new hand. You do the best you can. If you don't like that hand, don't worry, because at the end of the turn, you're going to draw a brand new one. And then the cost curve was like, you know, look what I can do for three resources. Watch me do 8 damage for just 3 resources. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to feel great. Yeah, those were kind of our guiding principles. I don't know how long you want to linger on that question. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I will go into more of an advanced type of this. Sure, for the deck building, I think the alter ego ability is something that I think new players often forget and maybe sometimes ignore, but the benefits sometimes of going to alter ego, either to recover or to get that alter ego ability, it is so powerful in the game. And it's a lot of people just see it as, oh, I have a +1 hand size, but there's so much more in that alter ego mechanic. And is that alter ego mechanic something that we could see more? I know you can't really explore that too much, but is that something that would be cool to explore, having an alter ego that could defeat a villain? Because I know I've done it with Captain Marvel. I stayed an alter ego. I've done it with 2 players, She-Hulk, Captain Marvel. I defeated Expert Kang in alter ego the entire game, both characters. But I was like, is there something that we could like anticipate maybe in the future, like something that we could do an alter ego that could just like game change? Because She-Hulk already has a little bit of that, which is amazing. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that, you know, I think we always want to encourage players to flip to alter ego form because it is such an important part of the game. But very early on when we were discussing alter ego, I do remember Nate French talking about how realistically players should be in hero form roughly, I think it was like 70 to 80% of the time, because that's where the action happens, both mechanically, that's where you can do a majority of your stuff, but also thematically too. It's very rare that Peter Parker is able to beat up the Green Goblin when he's just Peter Parker. I'm sure it's happened, but that's not the majority of Spider-Man's stories. So, we want to give players options when they're an alter ego. And I think it's fine that you can make builds where you can stay on that. But I don't know how much we would necessarily highlight any sort of build where it's like, you only ever stay alter ego. You can attack in this form. You can thwart in this form. I almost feel like that's a very advanced thing that if people can pull it off, cool, but that's not something we're necessarily pushing.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. So if somebody was asked me, like, why is Marvel Champions your number one game? And to me, one of the big parts of it is the cooperation. And it is hard to see that cooperation in your first couple plays because you're trying to get the mechanics down. A lot of people say like, oh my gosh, I learned the game at 4 players and it was just so long. So they'll often say only play it at 2. But what, honestly, when we started live streaming and I got Steve and Brian to join me, is I said, I want to highlight the cooperation in a 3 and 4 player game. And I want to show off how it really gets that level. Because honestly, short of like a sport like football where everybody needs to do their part in a very direct way, this is like the highest level cooperation between being able to take actions on other people's turns, building your decks to play off of each other, like even the pregame part of it with having a plan. And then just how it plays out. And it's very interesting how there is a turn structure. Like you didn't go with the design of now it's the heroes' turns collectively and they could do whatever they want. You actually have to do certain things in order, but you can do other things out of order. And I actually think that people should get to the 3 and 4 player game. Although like if I teach a new group, I will sit out and just play the villain so that I can help everybody instead of doing a 4 player. But can you talk about kind of the cooperation in those elements and how you made those decisions or what you're looking for players to do?
Yeah. Yeah. That's that was definitely something that got talked about a lot. In fact, I remember sort of an early version of the game where some of the initial feedback was people felt like maybe there wasn't enough cooperation. I remember a comparison being made to Lord of the Rings, where in the Lord of the Rings, there is one phase where all the players have to come together, and that's the quest phase. Everybody can choose, I'm going to send these people to the quest, and it's sort of a come together, you know, moment of no person can do this on their own. And people at the time really felt like, you know, maybe Marvel was lacking that, that there wasn't a let's all come together moment. And I think, you know, maybe that's still true for some people. But I appreciate like what you said about the fact that there is a clear turn structure and everybody gets their own thing. It lowers the bar of entry. So people, it's very accessible. They don't have to necessarily keep up with what everyone's doing at the table. You know, That's really hard. Like, I think a lot of people forget that that's really hard thing to do. If you're brand new to a game, to try to figure out what you're doing while also paying attention to everybody else is almost impossible. So we definitely put a turn structure in there so that people could just ease into it. And then, like you said, once you figure out, you know, the steps and the action windows, you realize like, oh, I could actually really help you out. Like, oh, is the villain tough right now? And you have a big attack that could do like 8 damage, but he's tough. Well, tell you what, let me play my little attack on your turn and we'll get rid of that tough status. And now you can swing in and really hit him. Or maybe the villain has an attachment that's giving him retaliate. You really want to hit him with your ally, but you don't want to lose to the retaliate. And that attachment has a hero action to spend resources to get rid of it. Well, I can step in on your turn and take that action. So I think as people get into it, maybe it's not obvious at first, but the hope is that people get into it, they start to see, oh, there really is actually a lot more going on here where we can cooperate and get that sense of teamwork. And then as we've gone on to from the core, we've taken steps to add even more, right, with team up cards. And then in the latest wave, the Mad Titan Shadow Wave, you have the Alliance keyword that allows people to actually chip in when paying for a card. So yeah, we're constantly trying to iterate. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
We have done multiple streams showing off the Alliance cards. I think I feel like our most famous one was Stand Together. We used that card and we played Hela. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, please.
With the Galactic Artifacts. So they all go to the victory display. And she also got the Cloak of Hercules, right? And so she was attacking like base 10, 9, 10,
four, 10 or, and then flipping 12.
And we were then playing Stand Together to deflect all that damage back to her. And through multiple plays of Stand Together, we did something like 60-something damage to her.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So we leaned into it. We let her get stronger so we could deflect. And we just love that. The Alliance, against the Hood, we use Problem Solvers to remove 36 threat. And, yeah, it's crazy. As one, I can't remember we're doing as one, but I did one on Steve's channel with Rocket.
Damage as ones.
Yeah, we were doing damage with those. So we love those cards. Like
that's great.
We love those. And those especially are better at 3 and 4 players.
Yeah.
And I think we really, really like that it's Avenger Guardian. And obviously we can't talk about it, but if we can input, like if you could have Avenger team ups or now Champions are coming out. Like if we can see more of those, oh my God, please.
We love those Alliance cards.
Oh.
Cool. That's great to hear.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to go into a little bit because we're talking about accessibility to new players and something like that. I'm going to go into, as a more experienced player, some of the feedback that we see in the community is sometimes the rules. And there's a lot of nitpicking about rules and setup orders. And the question is, are there any plans on addressing these heated issues with official answers, maybe posted on Hall of Heroes or on the FFG forum or something like that? Is there any, what's the process if somebody has some questions, where can they direct those questions?
Yeah, sure. If I could just take a second to sort of give a little history behind that question is the way things are currently set up is if someone has a rules question, they can go to our FFG website and look up Marvel Champions and find the support page and then they can enter a little question in, and then, you know, hit send. And what happens is that that question, you know, there's some drop downs, you select the game, and it gets filtered to the developers for that game. It used to go into directly into our work email, so like alongside of all of our employee emails and everything. And the sheer volume of Marvel questions got to be such that that Boggs and I, we asked our IT department, could you please set up a separate email account for these Marvel Champions questions, because they're just overwhelming. I mean, my boss is like trying to send me an invite to a meeting, and it's getting lost in all these Marvel Champions questions. And it kind of reached these, the volume reaches proportions of like, we cannot keep up anymore. And so when I say a little history lesson, what I wanted to share is that this method that I just described, that actually hasn't changed in over a decade. Like, since I've been working at FFG, that's kind of been the same process from when, you know, I was working on Lord of the Rings, and an initial run on a hot product might be something like 5,000 copies. And Marvel Champions moves a lot more than that with every new product. And the number of questions that we've gotten has gone from, you know, maybe one here or there, you know, to just kind of a constant stream. So, yeah, as a studio, we're in the process of reviewing that whole thing, you know, with how we get questions and how we respond to them, because it's not just Marvel Champions. No, it's Arkham Horror. That game is super huge and popular. People were having like, I'm joking, but people are having a little bit of like, you know, post-traumatic stress with like KeyForge questions were piling up. You know, it's just the sheer volume.
Is KeyForge still going on?
I thought it's on hiatus.
But like, like that was such a popular game. Like the developers, they could just spend all day long answering rules questions, you know, and barely keep up. So,
to push this a little, just maybe pushing that into a more condensed direction, would there be a possibility of maybe once a month or something like that, like the top three questions that were unanswered? Like top three things that that have been coming up, because I know you guys are in tune. You guys, you have the ear on the pulse. We see you guys, you know, on the Facebook group. So you guys are in tune and you are listening. I know sometimes you're bound by FFG's rules and Asmodee's rules, but is that something that you could see yourselves like maybe, okay, guys, like this has been coming up way too often in the chat rooms. Let's just address this and let's just be done with it. Is that something that you guys, Mike, I know because I worked with you a couple times on stuff like that. And I know sometimes you can't give an official rule to an answer on a personal level, but as a community asking like that question, like, we want this answered. Is there something that you guys could foresee?
Right. That is what they're reviewing right now. Like since we brought up those concerns, you know, like to our manager, he jumped right on it and he moved that conversation up the chain, and the response that he got was positive. Like that's the only reason I felt comfortable kind of peeling back the curtain and bringing this up a little bit on this podcast, is because I was so encouraged by the response, the receptiveness, the seriousness with which it's all been taken. Like customer service and rewarding players for playing our games is something that's very important to us as a studio. You know, not just at the designer level, but at the manager level, the executive level. Like, everybody really wants our customers to have a good experience, both playing the game and, you know, getting answers to their questions. So I feel confident that this matter is going to get resolved, you know, soon. I can't say for sure how soon, because I don't know, but I know that they're on it. And they're exploring a lot of options. That's what's exciting, is that I when I brought it up, I want to offer potential solutions whenever I raise a concern, but I deliberately left it more open because I know that other people might have better ideas than me. So like what you're suggesting sounds like a fine idea, and maybe that'll be what we end up doing, or maybe we'll end up going in a completely different direction that no one thought of. But the one thing I am confident of is that there's going to be improvements. And they'll be coming soon, so that hopefully, you know, people being frustrated with the slow reply or complete lack of reply will be a thing of the past, you know, and everyone will be very happy to know when they submit a question that it gets answered in a reasonable amount of time, you know, with some kind of clear answer that everyone can live with and enjoy the game.
And to be fair, this game is getting more and more cards. We're like 2 years in. I can only imagine in 5 years with the pool of cards, with the subtle interactions between every character, and how big, and sometimes like even I know, because again, I have playtested, I've seen this. It's like these games are playtested. I know sometimes people say, ah, they're not playtested, but they are playtested. But sometimes there is so many random things like, oh, I never played, let's say, Captain America versus this scenario with this thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, and that's, oh, shoot, that happened. Then what do I do? And here's a funny one. Here's a funny one. And maybe you can answer it, maybe not. But the environment, Streets of Mayhem with Ultron. Because Ultron drones up the Ultron environment would go away with the Streets of Mayhem because it says discard each other environment in play.
Oh. Yeah.
What happens to the drones that get created?
Boggs and I actually had a talk. I wonder if Boggs remembers the conversation the same way as I do, because sometimes I remember things differently. And so I don't want to bind him to my version. but what I remember is that, you know, we're designing all these different scenarios with all these different modular sets. And at some point, it's like you just said, stuff's going to slip through the cracks. You just can't keep track of all of it. And my memory of this is that it's sort of like saying, look, the modular sets that you put in, if you start mixing and matching like outside the recommended ones, which is something we want you to feel free to do, but if at some point you put one in that causes a weird game state, like, that's on you, buddy.
Yeah. Like,
you can just swap that one out. We can't anticipate all the, there's going to be weird ones. There's absolutely going to be weird ones where they just don't work because some of them are have such particular designs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that particular case, I would say, yeah, maybe just don't play Streets of Mayhem when you're playing the Ultron scenario.
That's what I figured. I'm like, because nice. I'm like, oh, maybe they just go into, like, they just never get created. Or maybe
Streets of Mayhem, they should. I think it's just, they just discard the setting environments. Ultron's isn't a setting environment.
Ooh.
Is it?
So it should work. It should work.
You might have actually prepared for that. So that's why Boggs is the real professional here. He thinks
play testers prepared for that. They catch this thing.
All right, Boggs, this one's aimed at you. So this isn't even so much of a question, but my favorite hero is Rocket, which I believe was designed by you.
Love
that. Oh, am I here?
You completely froze.
Brent, are you there?
Brent? Here.
Boggs, I'm looking at the cards now just out of curiosity. They absolutely say discard each other's setting environment.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
I hear?
Good. That worked out.
Oh, you're
yeah,
back.
I can hear you now. There you go.
Okay. So this one's aimed at you. My favorite hero is Rocket, which I believe you designed, and Steve's favorite hero is Miss Marvel, which I believe you designed. So tell us what you remember about those heroes and designing Rocket and Miss Marvel.
So Miss Marvel, was probably the first hero that I designed. I didn't know a lot about the character. So I went and read all her comics and immediately fell in love with her as a character. She's really awesome. Miss Marvel is actually the reason that we added the, in the brackets, the attack bracket and with the attack trade and all that stuff. Okay. Cause I was like, how can we pull these cards back? And Nate was like, well, maybe we can add these extra qualifiers. So, really just her mechanic of stretching, like it was sort of weirdly defining for the rest of the game. And it was really just trying to play with that mechanic along with her theme. And just, you know, she's a teenage girl. She's got all these problems and just, you know, trying to pack all that in there. Rocket was actually, I helped with Rocket, but Rocket was predominantly Aaron Haltom. He's another member of the FFG team. He came on board for the Galaxy's Most Wanted wave, helped out with Rocket and Groot and some scenario stuff. He really sort of set up the foundation for Rocket and Groot and got them pretty far until, you know, kind of the end. I think there was a point where Caleb and I kind of took over and tweaked a few things, but Rocket was mostly him. A good, I'd say 80-85% him. So if you're enjoying Rocket, that's all Aaron, pretty much.
Ain't no thing like me but me.
I gotta say, since day one, since as soon as I played Ms. Marvel, she was my absolute favorite, even to this day. I know, no disrespect to Strange, to Cap, to Venom, to all the other great ones, but there is something about Ms. Marvel that I just love. The card recursion mechanic, I have been abusing this now in protection I actually built a deck where she never goes to alter ego. I took on the Wrecking Crew on expert, and from turn one, staying recursion, wiggle room with Indomitable, getting ready, because now with the defense rule, flow like water. Oh my, I'm just like, this is just a dream. And then because for me, Ms. Marvel, every card that comes out is a Ms. Marvel card.
Oh yeah.
It's a Ms. Marvel card.
Every time you release an event, it's for her, yeah.
But nice. I do have to say, the new no quarter, I'm looking at that card, no quarter, with her.
And oh, in Nova's pack?
Nova's pack. Yeah. And I am seeing this with the with follow-throughs. And I kind of playtested that interaction, and being able to draw like 9-10 cards off an attack event is just
pretty good.
And if you want to see it, I think the guys at Late Night Gaming on last Friday, they actually played that out. I think it's Meg Bobber. I don't know if you know about these guys. They play off a tabletop, but and they were playing with the interactions with that card, and it was just complete nonsense. Just fill the event deck, and just because the ability is get an aggression card, so you're just filling your deck with 40 aggression cards, and just like da 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 da, and just taking them all, and it was just beautiful. So my question to you as an advanced player, is there sometimes a card that you release and you're going, oh, wow, this might be just a little too good?
I mean, you know, we have amazing playtesters, but there's also a limited number of playtesters, right? Compared to when we release it to the world, there are thousands and thousands of people. So there have, of course, been times where, you know, a card in playtesting will seem perfectly balanced, and then it comes out and it's like, that's a little stronger than intended. But also there are sometimes during testing where a card seems great, and then it comes out and people don't like it for whatever reason. So it's just, you know, that's just the nature of card games. Like, that happens in every single game I've ever seen. I will say with No Quarter, though, like, there was... during the testing of Nova, like, there was a push to sort of give aggression a little more oomph. Aggression is good at what it does, but sometimes it is very singular, just hits, right? So giving a little more variety and sort of play styles, and also encouraging more sort of aggression-based attacks. A lot of times the attacks in a deck, the strongest ones come from the hero's kit, which is exciting. That's cool. But it's also exciting when you can sort of mix that up with aggression and sort of highlight the aggression cards a little bit more. So, I think No Quarter is a very powerful card, especially in the right situation. But it was sort of intended to sort of give aggression a new play style that it just didn't have access to before.
That's which awesome. I love, because I've actually been doing a series of video on aspect strategies and like different things to play. Like, how can you play the aspect strategy instead of just the hero, but how can you play the aspect, and what can you look for when you're building a deck into these different aspects? And I think that's one of the things. And I think I call it the juggernaut, or all in, or like, I'll wreck your face strategy, which is basically all in on damage. Mm-hmm. And it's super fun, but that's quick games. It's always a quick game. It's like 10 minutes maybe. And you're like, you're done.
Next game. There you go.
Next game. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing we were talking about earlier with the design philosophy for the game. You know, it's like, we want people to feel powerful, and we want you to have fun. So if you're feeling powerful and having fun by just blitzing through your deck with No Quarter and lots of aggression cards, then that's great. That's exactly what's supposed to be.
There you go.
Caleb, it's like I planted you, because that leads exactly to my next part, which is this kind of thinking of advanced players kind of beyond that piece, but like there's all these play styles with this game that come up because there's clearly the like, can you win, right? And those pre-cons and that low level entry can beat that standard mode, but then there's expert mode and you added heroic. So just from your end, you did that, the modulars, but there's all sorts of different play styles. Like one of the first things I did was these speed runs, which I kind of took from video games. And I went through the Rise of Red Skull and I was playing it out. I was like, I was telling the community, I was like, I think that Captain Marvel can beat the entire Rise of Red Skull campaign in like 15 turns. And people are like, are you nuts? And they're like, can you get it on video? And so I did. That's when I first started filming. And I went through this. Then people started taking Hulk and other characters. I eventually did it with Star-Lord in 11 turns. And that was kind of fun to go through those. But then other things I've seen is like achievements. Steve does some of these. I did these with the guy I used to stream with, Larry. And we do achievements like fire all 10 arrows in one turn with Hawkeye. Or I drew out all my cards in Ant-Man. And I was so proud of myself, only to find out that Caleb told me that's an auto loss condition. So we lost that game. But I drew all the cards. So we've got all sorts of achievements like this. And then even Steve on his channel has done like the What If, where he's taken like Spider Strange. And
Iron Hulk
and some of those and put those together, and it's just neat. And originally, I'll get to my question, you had posted some like achievements for the original core set heroes, and I'm wondering, I'd love to see like a space or a place for achievements or play styles or these, like even just a PDF that was printed where you could add some of these things in for players that, yeah, you're still playing on expert mode or standard mode that you normally do, but you have these extra layers that you're going for. Is that something that you might consider?
I'm sure we're open to it. Sounds like there's interest in it. That was actually our previous manager, Jim Cartwright, who's moved up at the studio. He really championed the achievement list. Box, do you remember who else was involved with that?
It was Jim and Jeremy's Worm. So Jim, yeah. He's a big achievement hunter. He likes doing it in pretty much every game that he plays. And he thought it'd be fun. He's like, as a player, I would love to do this. But when he brought it up, both Caleb and I were very, very busy. So Jim is a busy guy too, but he was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put it together.
That's why Jim's a busy guy. Cause he's like, I'm going to do that too.
Yeah. Very gung ho. So, he talked with both Caleb and I about, you know, different things that could be on the list, but I think it was really him and Jeremy. If you know Jeremy's Wern's history, he's just like a very intense card game player. Like he's always pushing every game he plays. So he kind of mathed some stuff out with Jim and just tried to put together a list that they thought was the most exciting.
I can relate to that because I did it too. I was like, can I find the math? Is there a way to actually do Hawkeye and shoot 10 arrows? Yeah, is there a way to do 150 damage with a lightning strike from Thor? Is there a way? So
yeah. Cast 20 spells was strange, right? 20
yeah, spells. Eight, I got turn. 18. I think you got, or Larry
yeah,
got.
Yeah, Larry got to 19.
Yeah.
I haven't heard much discussion about, you know, whether we'll do another list like that, but if there's an audience for it, it's definitely something we can talk about internally and maybe do again.
Or maybe we can just invite the community to like, why put everything on yourself? You know, if you can invite the community, hey, have you tried something that was amazing? Share with the community and you guys, hey, that's a good idea. And I think you're like, why always put everything on yourselves to, you know, come up with everything? You're like, there's thousands of people who love this game. You know, there's thousands of ideas that can be born from, you know, how can you do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think what we're talking about is really something that largely falls under organized play and marketing. And
we know these guys.
Wonderful people, very, very busy people as well. And so we've had conversations where they express a ton of enthusiasm and support for Marvel Champions. We know Marvel Champions is important to them. They just have a lot of other lines that are very important to them too. And so it's difficult for them to balance. For me and Boggs, you know, I'm afraid the reason we don't get to do a lot of that stuff is the same reason it's difficult for us to keep up with rules questions. It's just we're already very busy making lots of Marvel Champions content.
And
I think, because the cadence of, are you guys kind of mandated to push one pack a month? Or, because for me, and I'm just speaking for myself, But sometimes I feel like this is my first LCG. I bought the Arkham Horror not that long ago and started with the core set. So I'm kind of exploring that universe now as well. But as a content creator and as a player, sometimes I feel like maybe the once a month is, wow, I feel like I just started learning this and I'm like, oh, I'm already have to go into this next one. Because I'm a completionist, I want to collect everything. And sometimes I feel like, wow, there's just so much. And I'm like, I don't feel like 30 days or whatever time is enough time to actually get to know this new character and get to appreciate. And I think that comes into the competitiveness where, okay, well, I always want to get the best. And then I go into like, oh, this is the best card for that hero. And then nothing else matters. Where if maybe the packs were a little slower and then your business, FFG business is like, what is he talking about? Shut him up. But I think if the players have more time to appreciate and to really get to know these characters, maybe like they won't, I don't know where I'm going with this. I think it's just.
Would you change the release schedule?
Yeah. And especially with COVID, like with everything going on with COVID and everything, that's something that could give you more time to develop and think about these things.
Well,
sorry, that was a loaded question there.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. I mean, the simple fact is that Boggs and I at the developer level, we do not set the release schedule. We are asked for our opinions about things. Absolutely. It's a conversation, but ultimately those things are decided above our pay grade. And we were talking about Jim earlier, which was interesting, you know, the coming up with the achievements. And Jim is also a huge fan of the game and very supportive and enthusiastic. And I know that one of the things that they're exploring is sort of how maybe we could adjust the release cadence more to address what you guys were saying about feeling like, you know, maybe once every month is you know, overwhelming to some people. I know it's not to everybody. Some people are like, as soon as they get the pack, they want the next one. But I think there was some discussion about how things could shift to maybe be two packs every 2 months or something, drop them out together. It'd be interesting to see what comes of that.
I could see that with the team up cards in some of them, like when you get Ant-Man and Wasp together, mm-hmm. right? Or you get Wanda and Vision or whatever.
Yeah,
Wanda and Quicksilver together. Those ones would kind of make sense to come together because you kind of are ready to be put together.
Right. What I can say though is that you know, regardless of what they do there, it's not going to change our workflow at our level. We're going to continue to develop the same amount of content every year. I think everyone, including us, is very happy with the success of Marvel Champions and the amount of product we're able to release each year and the kind of reception that product's been getting pretty steadily now. So I don't think anyone really wants to pump the brake.
Yeah, I have to say I'm pretty happy. I mean, I'm used to, on this episode, I'm usually reviewing 3, 4, 5, 8 board games an episode is what I'm used to. So I'm kind of that cult of the new. So I'm always ready for the new thing to come out and whatnot. So awesome. Well, we've asked you a lot of questions. There's obviously more questions, which means I'll just have to have you back again in a year's time or so as well. But before we go, you've been doing on some of the podcasts, and I do want to shout out to Marvel Champions Monthly for people and Critical Encounters, which you have both been on some of their episodes. So go to their podcast feeds and listen to those for more questions from these two. But you've done some like villain challenges on those. But I want to actually have you give us the opposite. Give us a hero challenge. So we've been playing a lot of three players. So I'd like to stream a three player. What heroes, maybe with what aspects, do you think would be neat to put together? And then for the people who play solo, because there's just so many people playing this game at home solo, can you give us maybe a solo hero aspect, maybe a villain that would be interesting for them to fight? So you can take a minute to think about that and let us know. But I'd like to focus on the hero end of it instead of the villain end.
And I'll have one last little question after that.
Boy, Boggs, I hope you have a good answer for this one. Because when I think of hero challenges, I think my challenge is to play someone besides Captain America. that's my biggest hero challenge. I just never get bored of throwing that shield.
I think Captain America throw the shield on 10 people.
Captain America in what aspect for solo players? Would you take him out of leadership?
I don't know. I've only ever played Captain America in leadership.
With the free gun, right? Just as is?
Yeah, like seriously, I think I said that somewhere else. You mentioned a couple other podcasts have been on. I'm pretty sure I said it on one of those recently that I don't have a lot of time to do custom deck building. So my development cycle, you know, it's coming up with the pre-cons and then testing those very thoroughly to make sure that that's a positive experience. And so that's typically all I ever end up playing with any of these heroes. I'm pretty sure I've played every single one of the heroes in the game with their pre-con and that's it. I don't think I've ever found the time. I know Boggs has been able to do that more than I have, but I mostly rely on our testers to do the custom.
We'll say for the solo community, play Captain America not in leadership. And what villain would be strange, like a non-Hydra villain for people to play?
Mm. Let's see. What are the standalone ones we have? We got Kang and Hood. I guess Cap's fought all of those.
Wrecking Crew and the two goblins.
Yeah, maybe he should fight someone in the galaxy's most wanted. There's some villains in there. He doesn't fight Nebula that often.
All right.
Maybe they could have Cap fight Nebula.
So the solo is to play Captain America, not the pre-con. So take him out of leadership and fight Nebula. I like that. Bosh, can you give us a triple matchup that we can stream? Three heroes. If you want to give us aspects, you can. If you don't, you don't have to.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of the. I just finished them, most of them, the Disney shows. I was a little bit behind, so I'm going to say Wanda, Vision, and Quicksilver.
Okay.
As a three team, all in basic, no aspect cards.
I love it. Hey guys,
Wanda, Vision. Don't go there, Steve. Don't go there. All right.
That's basic awesome. Is not an aspect. I know.
So put those three together. Wanda, Vision, Quicksilver, all in basics, no aspects. Team them up. Perfect. So we're going to stream that for everybody. And people can play that one if you're looking to play cooperative three-player. All right, Steve, you said you had one more thing before we go.
One last question. And I guess you guys feel free to – this is a hard-hitting one. Are there any heroes – that you wish you could revisit and maybe tweak a bit? Because I know there's always something called power creeping in games. Is there any heroes that you just, you could like, oh man, maybe if we could tweak this, or is that card design opportunities that are left open for the future? And we'll get the elephant out of the room because everyone says Hulk. So
it's any green heroes.
No. I love Hulk. But again, For some reason, it's always the black sheep of the thing. Everyone's like, ugh.
There's always going to be something in those. So are there any heroes that you'd be interested in going back to revisit?
I think personally, like, you know, for me, there's always designs I can look back on and say, oh, I wish I'd done that or this, but we're always moving forward and there's always new exciting things to create. And that's what I tend to focus on. But with that in mind, like our aspect pool is so broad. There's so much room for that to grow. And I think there's so much room for that to play with old content. So actually, you know, in this next wave, we really tried to think about a lot of sort of the old heroes and things that they did. So I would encourage players to kind of keep their eyes open for things in the Sinister Motives wave that can sort of be loaded back into some older heroes because I think that's exciting design space and it's exciting for the players.
Oh, I like that. That's a great answer. Caleb, yeah, I just
have to agree with Boggs. Like nothing that we ever do is perfect, but we put a lot of love and attention into everything we've done so far and feel really good that every hero has found its audience. You know, I had a big smile on my face earlier, Steve, you talking about your son just having a blast smashing things with Hulk. You know, that was our goal. you know, and so it's always fun to hear that we have such a broad audience of players, and, you know, not every hero is going to appeal to everyone. I don't think that was ever realistic, but to know that every hero has its audience feels really good. And like Bog said, it's the perfect answers. We are looking forward and doing things with the card pool that can hopefully be looped back to some previous heroes to allow you to see them in a different light or play with them in a new way. So I'm just incredibly happy with everything we've been able to do so far, and looking forward to what else is to come.
Oh, I know. And just speaking for the community, I think as a general, I think one of the characters that has the most, I think came from everyone saying like, oh, he's I hate tier lists, by the way. But I cannot stand tier lists, but that's just me. You said like, okay, like Thor. Oh, Thor is, everyone's like so bad. I'm like, what are you talking about? And all the new aspect cards, all the new Asgardian cards, which godlike stamina. I so wish that would have been a whole card too, by the way. I was like, oh, I wish that could have been a whole card as well, but it has the Asgardian only. So, but for me, like, that card was just amazing. Remove a status and heal. I was like, wow, that's super good. Very thematic. And I love that now it gives more room to grow the deck building aspect, which is what I think 99% of the community loves about this game, is just like the infinite numbers of ways you can approach a character. And I wasn't giving any grief to Hulk, because Hulk is basically, I think I have the most videos on Hulk on of every other hero. I was looking at my playlist. I think I have like 30 Hulk videos. And then I'm like, I have 4 with Captain America and like 3 with this. I was like, so Hulk, because everyone's like, oh, how do I figure Hulk out? And I'm like, add resources, add high cost cards, yours, add Lockjaw to everything you do.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for your time. Everybody, make sure you check out Steve on his channel, Beat the Game, or you can watch him streaming with me weekly on Step Into the Portal. I want to thank Caleb and Boggs. I checked a bucket list item, getting to talk to the designers of my favorite game. I think I'm 3,000 plays into this game. So I play it all the time. I love it. It has pushed Isaac Childress's Gloomhaven aside, which used to be my number one. And Isaac is a friend, so I've actually told him that. And Gaia Project. Yeah, exactly. Gaia Project, which I've actually gotten to play with Isaac, which is one of my other favorite games. But Marvel Champions has become my easy number one. So thanks so much for taking the time. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep designing Marvel Champions, and hopefully we'll have you back on again.
You guys are great.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks again for having us.
Oh, you guys are a blast. Thank you.
All right, thanks, everybody. I am the Brant, and on behalf of Steve as well from Beat the Game, till next time, I hope you step into the portal. Bye, everybody. Have a good one. Thanks for listening.